Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, what do the results of the New Hampshire presidential primary portend for both Republicans and Democrats in the race to the White House? Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel. In New Hampshire, the so-called anti-establishment candidates won the day.
We are going to do something so good and so fast and so strong, and the world is going to respect us again. Believe me.
That was the inimitable Donald Trump, the victor in the New Hampshire Republican primary. Although he lost to Ted Cruz in Iowa, Donald Trump won the New Hampshire contest by a decisive margin. He received 34% of the vote, more than double his nearest competitor, allowing him to regain momentum, which he will ride to the upcoming primaries, especially the state of South Carolina. While Trump's victory was not a surprise given his big lead in the polls, the second-place finish for Ohio Governor John Kasich made headlines. He defeated the more well-known names such as Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, and Jeb Bush, and he did it by relentless campaigning, town hall meetings, and by rejecting the politics of fear that has characterized much of the rhetoric on the Republican side.
We never went negative because we have more good to sell than to spend our time being critical of somebody else. And maybe we are turning the page on a dark part of American politics, because tonight the light overcame the darkness of negative campaigning.
That was Governor John Kasich reveling in his second-place finish after Donald Trump in the Republican primary in New Hampshire. On the Democratic side, not surprisingly, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders routed former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton by a 60-38% margin. In a rousing victory speech, Senator Sanders underscored his iconic theme that he is fomenting nothing less than a political revolution.
Together, we have sent the message that will echo from Wall Street to Washington, from Maine to California. And that is that the government of our great country belongs to all of the people and not just a handful of wealthy campaign contributors and their super PACs.
The win for Senator Sanders was a powerful blow to Secretary Clinton, who has a deep history with New Hampshire voters and offered policy ideas that seem to reflect the moderate, pragmatic politics of the state. But Senator Sanders, who has proposed a liberal agenda to raise taxes on the wealthy and impose regulations on Wall Street, drew support from a wide cross-section of the electorate, even edging out Hillary Clinton among women and younger voters, previously considered her strong suit. All of the top contenders have their sights set on the next party contests on February 20th, when Republicans hold a primary election in South Carolina and Democrats hold party caucuses in the western state of Nevada, best known as the country's gambling center. 3 days later, Republicans have their caucuses set for Nevada, while Democrats will hold their South Carolina primary on February 27th. With us to discuss the state of the race are our veteran political analysts. John Fortier is a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, a centrist policy group based here in Washington. He's also a regular columnist for the Politico newspaper. And Igor Volsky, he's deputy director of the Center for American Progress Action Fund, and that's a liberal think tank here in Washington. Both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you.
We haven't been back here since the Iowa caucuses, so we'll wrap those into our discussion as well. First to you, John Fortier, your reaction to the results of the electoral contest, both in Iowa, but particularly now in New Hampshire. What do they tell us about the state of the race on both sides?
Well, first, on the Republican side, we often think of the races as having two factions or two lanes in the Republican Party, a more conservative Christian social wing and a more establishment conservative wing. This time we might have three wings. We have certainly evangelical conservatives supported Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz won in Iowa, is one of the strong candidates, is one of the top three candidates on the Republican side. We have some confusion in the establishment wing. We have a number of candidates, and talk about that in a bit. And then we also have the Trump wing. Trump lane is new, and Trump has had significant support that doesn't come clearly from one or the other. Certainly his issues of immigration, bringing in some potential new voters who are more white working class voters. So Donald Trump has done well in Iowa, not as well as he wanted. He came in second, but won very significantly in New Hampshire, is doing well. Ted Cruz doing pretty well. But it's those establishment candidates. Will one of them emerge? And Marco Rubio was the one in Iowa who looked like he might be breaking out of the pack and putting the others behind him. Didn't do as well in New Hampshire. Now John Kasich has won. Jeb Bush did a little better than expected. Those three will be fighting for that vote. At the end of the day, I don't think John Kasich, while it was a good win in New Hampshire, is likely to be able to win anywhere else. Really, it was probably a little bit liberal for his party, but I think it's confusing for a bit on that side, and so Trump and Cruz look like the two front runners, unless one other can emerge from that. Briefly, on the Democratic side, Iowa was very close. Hillary Clinton claimed a victory, but if one goes back and looks at the votes, it was nearly a tie between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. And in Bernie Sanders' backyard, the state right next to his own in Vermont, New Hampshire, he won significantly. This is a good moment for Bernie Sanders. I think it does show that he has some staying power. He will be in this race for a while. I do think there's some caution looking forward because those two states for Democrats are very white states where white liberals do very well. And the other parts of the parties, like African-American, Hispanics, blue-collar voters, not well represented there. And the expectation is that Hillary Clinton will do well there going forward. So in a state like South Carolina or Nevada, will do well. But we'll have to see. Bernie Sanders has some momentum. If he were able to break through in some of those later states, I think we would be talking more seriously about a real possibility of Bernie Sanders beating Hillary Clinton. At this point, I think we're waiting to see. He's a strong candidate, but Hillary is still the favorite.
Now your turn, Igor Volsky. Your take on the Iowa caucuses and more recently, New Hampshire.
Yeah, I think I agree with John. I mean, it really is the year of the outsider. At least early on, that's what voters want. Aspirational ideas, big goals, big targets. How are we going to change America, make it better? That's not what Hillary is selling. That's not what Hillary has ever sold. Hillary will let you know that she will be ready on day one, and she will design policies not with great ideas of Medicare for all and kind of Bernie's very bombastic policy proposals, but she'll have very reasonable proposals where she's already baked in compromise with the other side to get it through Congress. That's just how she thinks. That's the kind of candidate she is. And the big question for all of these folks, and this is true on the Republican side, is do voters want someone who they feel can get things done? That would be in the mold of maybe a Hillary, maybe more of a Kasich, although I agree it's hard to see a path for him out of New Hampshire. Or do they want an aspirational leader in the mold of Trump, in the mold of Bernie Sanders to some degree, although it's very hard to compare the two? And that will really dictate what kind of election we're going to have. For Trump, it was a big night in New Hampshire. He was the odds-on favorite to win for a long, long time. And he is going to do well in the races ahead. And it's kind of hard to see how not only Kasich, but some of the other Republicans like Ted Cruz can catch up to him in places in the South where he's very, very strong. So that, I think, is going to be something that the Republicans are going to have to grapple with moving forward.
Well, let's stay on the topic of Republicans, John Fortier, to talk about the implications. Not long ago, a conservative Republican-oriented magazine, the National Review, came out against Trump. You know, this is a disaster for our brand. What are the implications of his success thus far for the party and for the nominee?
Well, look, as I said before, I think it's traditional for Republicans to have more social conservatives and more establishment conservatives. But Trump is a bit of a different character. And he will tell you that he brings out some new people. He does. He brings out essentially white working class downtrodden people, mostly in the Republican Party, but arguably some independents and even some Democrats might be for him. And strongly on the issues of immigration and to some extent some of the worries connected of immigration and foreign policy or terrorism that might come here. So he certainly has a constituency. It's a strong constituency. And we've heard over and over again how all the bombastic things that he says will bring him down, and it does not seem to bring him down. He has a core group that's with him. I think the question at the end of the day, and National Review is asking this and others, is he might actually, if he were the nominee, bring in some new voters, people who are not regularly voting or regularly voting the Republican Party. but he's also likely to turn away a good number. And at least at this point, it looks like he might turn away more than that. And so some Republicans are asking, does he really unravel the Republican coalition that's existed for quite a while, sometimes in tension, but certainly we knew the outlines of the types of people who call themselves Republican. He might shake it up a bit, and maybe not to the help of the party, but really ultimately to the hurt of the party.
Turning back to you, Igor Volska, you have your pulse, particularly on the Democrats, the Center for American Progress, affiliated more with the Democratic Party. What about the Sanders phenomenon? What is driving Sanders' popularity, even among women and young voters, whom normally Hillary Clinton would like to claim? She did poorly among them. And then there was also the so-called trust factor, where polls show that over 90% of the people in certain polls said that Sanders was more honest. She pulled very low on that trust factor.
Well, look, I think that if you have been in the public eye for 20, 30, 40 years and you've been beaten up every day of that time as dishonest, as untrustworthy, there's scandal after scandal. The latest iteration is the Benghazi scandal that we've seen that is no scandal at all. Many investigations have found that now. It's not surprising that your favorability ratings aren't going to be as high as the guy who's been on the national scene for all of 10 minutes. I mean, that's just the truth of the matter. So I think part of that is explained by the fact that there's really been an orchestrated effort to bring Hillary Clinton down, to bring her husband down, and she's been able to survive a lot of these battles. If you look at the policies between what Hillary is proposing and what Bernie is proposing, yes, there are some differences, but they're not great differences. So it really comes down to a question of style, of delivery, of this notion to many voters that Bernie is able to connect with particularly liberal primary voters on an emotional level that Hillary simply isn't reaching. Now, will that change as you move through the race and the race tightens in many respects, and voters really kind of realize this isn't the first primary or the second primary? Like, we're getting close to picking our nominee. Are we really comfortable with whoever we're voting for? Voters are going to ask that. And just to return quickly on the Republican side, I think it's very troubling that if the strain of thought is that the xenophobia, homophobia, and sexism that Donald Trump portrays in the campaign trail every single day can bring in new voters into the Republican Party, you know, I think we're then in a lot bigger trouble, maybe as a Republican Party and as a country, than I would have thought.
Well, we'll have more in just a minute. But first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier. He's a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center here in Washington, and Igor Volsky. He's deputy director of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. That's a liberal think tank based here in Washington. And we are discussing the results of the New Hampshire primary and looking ahead to the challenges in upcoming primary races. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Gabriel Amadi. He's from the Jos Plateau State in Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on Facebook. Well, back to you, John Fortier. If you want to get a word in edgewise with respect to Hillary Clinton's vulnerabilities vis-a-vis Bernie Sanders, you know, he really is doing well. We know that Vermont, or rather New Hampshire and Iowa, are not necessarily representative, very white, rural, as you said. Nonetheless, is he getting some momentum here?
Well, I think we always knew that there would be a challenge from Hillary Clinton's left. Questions about, was she too hawkish and she voted for the Iraq War? Was she not concerned enough about economic inequality? Could there be somebody who made that case better than her? And I think Bernie Sanders wasn't thought of as the top candidate to make that message. There were some who hoped for Senator Elizabeth Warren to jump in the race, but he really has made the most of it and does really quite well with white liberal voters. I do think, though, this question ahead, is his appeal greater than that? We don't know. And when we go to a state like South Carolina, where the African-American population is significant, now, that'll be a real test for him. I mean, Barack Obama actually did have a coalition that had a lot of the same Bernie Sanders voters, people worried about the war and younger voters, more liberal whites, and African Americans. And that was a good coalition, but one that barely beat Hillary Clinton in 2008. Does Bernie Sanders have some support out of that core group that is well represented in Iowa and New Hampshire? We'll have to see. He has momentum. There are people who will ask some questions about Hillary Clinton, but she has a real opportunity to stop that momentum in the next coming contests. There are only two of them left. There's still a lot of candidates on the Republican side. So I expect Bernie Sanders will be, even if he doesn't win this race, he'll be around for a long time. It takes a long time to accumulate delegates the way the Democrats assign them proportionally. So he could be a factor going really deep into the campaign. But he hasn't proved to me yet that he can win on a broader scale. He'd have to do that in some other states other than Iowa and New Hampshire.
So we'll have to see. Well, back to you, Igor Volsky. Just quickly on Bernie Sanders, the question being, could he energize the Democratic electorate based on this large voter turnout that we just saw in New Hampshire to potentially defeat Republicans in November? Of course, he talks about these policy prescriptions, which would be very difficult to implement with the Republican Congress. But when he talks about political revolution, the implication is that not just somebody like him could win in a general election, but that would necessitate people voting for more Democrats and to defeat Republicans in the Congress to implement the agenda. So that is a tall order.
It is, but to be fair, lawmakers from both sides of the aisle have talked about revolution, the Reagan revolution, the Gingrich revolution. So to hear Bernie talk about a revolution isn't necessarily new. And yes, his ideas are big. And yes, in this current political climate, they may be impractical. We'll have to see what the new Congress brings. But I don't think voters have told us that they care about that. They seem to be attracted to these big ideas, to only really want to hear about the big ideas and not the minutiae of policy, to only hear that you're going to carpet bomb ISIS somehow, you know, and not worry about the consequences of that policy. That's what they want. They want the headlines, not the details in the actual article. And if that's the case, and if it holds true throughout this election season, then yes, you'll have a Trump-Sanders race, I think.
I know when you say carpet bomb, that was something that Ted Cruz said, and I would perhaps be careful about comparing that statement with maybe something that Bernie Sanders said.
I didn't mean to compare the two. It's just kind of the first very general statement that came to mind where there's no specific policy. And the same thing for Bernie. I mean, Bernie's foreign policy strategy is we'll get a coalition of Arab countries and have Muslim forces fight ISIS. Okay, great idea. Nobody's thought of that before.
Well, back to you, John Fortier. Now, another candidate, but who perhaps is much more palatable to a broader cross-section, John Kasich, also seems to appeal to the electorate's anxieties. So John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, coming in a strong second in New Hampshire, what are his challenges ahead? Who's going to be nipping at his heels? What about the so-called establishment Republicans left in the race?
Well, it was a good result for him. I think had John Kasich failed to finish a strong second as he did, if he'd been further back in the pack, he might have been pulling out of the race today. This was his one place to make a real stand. New Hampshire has a more libertarian, somewhat more liberal Republican electorate than certainly than Iowa, than much of the country. You saw in the last election in 2012 where John Huntsman, a candidate with a similar profile, really running on the left of his party, did quite well there. So he had to do well there. I think the question is, does he go beyond that? He is often the Democrats' favorite Republican. He's been endorsed by the more liberal newspapers in the area, the Boston Globe and others. And he's certainly making a play for what we might call this establishment lane of the party. I think it's going to be hard for him in other places other than New Hampshire to make that case. But I think his win has really essentially mucked up the race for those establishments. If Marco Rubio thought that after Iowa he might really propel himself to be a third alternative and do better, that didn't happen. Jeb Bush has still been struggling. It's not so simple to do this, but if you took John Kasich's vote and Jeb Bush's vote and Marco Rubio's and added them up, it's a pretty substantial vote. It's bigger than Donald Trump's vote. So that's the hope on the establishment side, that somehow that field winnows down to one pretty quickly in the next few weeks, and that someone like a Marco Rubio or perhaps Bush or Kasich can be an alternative to Trump or Cruz. If that doesn't happen, really Trump and Cruz are strengthened, either the more social conservative or the more populist working class Trump, whatever he is today, will benefit from this wing with Kasich, Rubio, and Bush being divided.
Turning to you, Igor, for your take on the Republican side with respect to chances for John Kasich, governor of Ohio, can he move forward on the second place finish in New Hampshire and try to push his message of inclusiveness and compromise, this lack of negative campaigning, which is certainly a contrast to his adversaries. Could that resonate with a more angrier, more conservative Republican electorate in the upcoming states?
Well, I mean, to me, these are really stylistic differences. On the policy, yes, Kasich has some outlier policies. Yes, he expanded Medicaid in Ohio, which most Republicans would not do. But on the whole, if you look at a lot of his policies, his tax policy, for instance, I mean, you kind of go down the line. Kasich is about to sign a bill in Ohio that defunds Planned Parenthood, something Trump also supports. So you line all of these folks up. Trump, Rubio, Kasich. I mean, who else is left? I'm not sure. You line all of them up, and they really are very similar. It's really stylistic differences that we're talking about. I think that that's important to remember.
Maybe
so. I would say also on the Democrats, it's not surprising. And both sides are arguing. They more or less agree on the big policies, and they disagree on the style and how strongly they would push them. Really, it's a race for Republicans to say, well, who do we feel really good represents our views, and Democrats to say the same. So it's not so surprising that the views that they're advocating are so different. It's the types of people that you'd want to represent those views in the general election that people are looking to put their stamp on.
That may be true. And again, for Kasich, at least, you know, he talks about building coalitions, whether on the international scene. He talks about reaching across the aisle here in the United States vis-a-vis Democrats in the Congress. So you're right. It may be just stylistics, but it certainly does sound more appealing.
It sounds appealing, but you look at his record in the House. I mean, this is a conservative guy, particularly when it comes to the economy. I mean, he supports Social Security privatization, all kinds of Medicare reforms that have been rejected by voters time and time again. The problem is that this isn't an election about these ideas. This is an election about who can scream the loudest in many respects.
Well, here's a man that wants to counter this who can scream the loudest, and that is the prospect, John Fortier, of what we call a third-party bid. What about New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg's proposal that he might jump in to the race? He's very moderate, and he says if there's a possibility that Trump may be getting the Republican nomination and a Sanders on the left to get the Democrats, that he might jump in. What are your thoughts about the Bloomberg factor?
I think we have a lot of reasons why third-party candidates don't tend to do that well in America, and some of those are going to affect Michael Bloomberg. But he does have, if you remember, we had Ross Perot back in the 90s, who was a billionaire who was able to run somewhat in the middle of the electorate, and that might be his plan. If he felt as if the combination of the Republican and Democratic nominee left enough space for him in the middle, there is some room for him to run there. Certainly, the Republican Party is further to the right, and Democratic Party is further to the left. There's space in there between the two parties. That being said, you know, a lot of people who are independents really regularly vote Republican or regularly vote Democratic. It's not as clear what the path is in the middle. I think, actually, Michael Bloomberg, who has, in his record, been both a Republican and a Democrat and an independent at various times, and as Republican was the mayor of New York City, which is really one of the more liberal areas one could represent. If he does that, I think he's actually likely to take more votes from the Democratic Party, many more votes than the Republican Party. I think Republicans would probably welcome Michael Bloomberg. He's made some very strong stands on gun control and the environment in ways that I think he's not going to peel that many Republican voters away, but arguably he could peel maybe moderate Democratic voters in the Northeast. So I think it's possible he'd have his own resources. Very few people could do a third-party run like he could. I still think it's probably unlikely he'll run, and if he does run, I think he's probably likely to take more from the Democratic Party than the Republicans.
Turning to you, Igor Volsky, for your take on a possible Mayor Bloomberg entry into the race. And do you agree with John Fortier that he would take more away from Democrats probably in a general election?
Well, Bloomberg is probably the only candidate who's going to make Donald Trump look like a loser just because he's so much richer than Donald Trump. But yes, I think he will probably take some of those votes away from the Democratic side. But it's difficult, I think, for a billionaire like Michael Bloomberg to address a lot of the income inequality concerns that have been animating the Democratic race. He might mean very well and his heart might be in the right place, but I think it's a hard sell. His calculation is if it looks like Bernie Sanders is really going to be the nominee and Hillary's out of this thing, that's where he sees an opportunity for someone like him. And so if that happens, then, you know, we thought this race has been interesting so far. It's going to get even more exciting.
On that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, John Fortier, political scientist, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Igor Volsky. He's deputy director of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Kelvin Fowler. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.